This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
His bottom line was, we are winning the war against Gaza. And he said he's fighting a war on six fronts, not just in Gaza, but against Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, now in the West Bank also, and directly against Iran in a way.
That was Margaret Bashir, VOA UN correspondent, on addresses by Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu at the UN General Assembly. Details coming up. Also, VOA's Peter Cloti interviews President William Ruto, and U.S. President Joe Biden's awaited long trip to Africa will be in October. These stories and more on African News Tonight. So we start with our top story. At the UN General Assembly, world leaders are urging a concerted diplomatic drive to end the war in Gaza and to avert further escalation in the region. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir talked to me about Netanyahu's speech as well as General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan's press conference at the General Assembly.
Benjamin Netanyahu, he arrived late to New York because of the escalation between Israel and Hezbollah in recent days. He spoke on Friday morning, and he said he kind of doubled down on everything he's been saying recently. He struck a very strong tone against Iran, against its proxies in the Middle East, including Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the Houthis in Yemen. And his bottom line was, we are winning the war against Gaza. And he said he's fighting a war on six fronts, not just in Gaza, but against Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, now in the West Bank also, and directly against Iran in a way, because he said they attacked him, you know, they attacked Israel for the first time in April. But he reassured everyone that he is winning. And he said this is a battle of good and evil, between good and evil. And Israel is the good and those guys are the evil, and that the international community should get on board with Israel. And he was very critical of the UN community, of the, you know, the member states, because always there's very strong support in the 193 General Assembly members for the Palestinians. There have been many resolutions over the years and quite recently in the past year that, for instance, have called for Israel to stop settlements, that have called for Israel to stop the war in Gaza, to have a ceasefire, to let more aid in, and so on. And he said that basically all these things come out of a place of anti-Semitism against Israel, and he called the UN a swamp of anti-Semitic bile. And the Deputy Secretary General was sitting on the dais listening to his speech.
And Margaret, the big elephant in the room, Sudan, one of the warring generals, Burhan, at the UN General Assembly. Talk to us a little about that.
Yeah, he addressed the General Assembly on Thursday, and Thursday evening in New York, he gave a small press conference. We were there, and he spoke about the Rapid Support Forces, his rival, you know, General Hemedti, and he said that first he said he wants to end the war and that without preconditions. He said, we're keen to stop the war and restore peace and security without preconditions. He was very clear that he would not sit with his rival unless the RSF forces are pulled back, pulled out. And he said that he did not go to Switzerland in August because he didn't like how the invitation was sent to him. You know, there was that conference that the Americans and the Saudis co-hosted in Geneva, and he didn't attend, but the RSF did. And he said that he wasn't invited as the head of state of Sudan. He was invited personally, in a personal capacity. And I guess he was offended by that because he sees himself as the de facto ruler of Sudan. And he was indeed recognized as such by standing on the General Assembly stage on Thursday. So he also, which I thought was interesting, and I've seen his ambassador do it here at Security Council meetings as well, he downplayed the situation of hunger in Sudan. You know, it's a massive, massive food crisis. Famine declared in parts of Darfur. there's 14 other hotspots in the country where risk of famine in the coming months. He said that the food gap is there, but it has not reached the level of famine yet. So I think that the UN and the World Food Program and international food monitors who say when there's famines, who declare them, you know, monitor the criteria, might disagree with him on that.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir, she talked to me from New York. On the sidelines of the UN General Assembly, Kenya's President William Ruto sat down with VOA's Peter Kloti. In this excerpt of their conversation, they discussed Ruto's visit last week to Haiti, where Kenya has deployed 400 police officers as part of a multilateral effort to halt the gang violence that has terrorized the country. The president tells Peter he spoke with Haiti's political leadership for several hours and spent time with the Kenyan police command as well as with the Haitian police.
And my assessment was much more positive than I ever thought. And the reports they gave me indicated that what initially pessimists and critics and people who did not see any hope in Haiti has changed, you know. The airport that had gunfire all over the place now is safe, and there are more flights flying in and out. The palace, which was under siege, is now safe. The national hospital that had challenges is now in good hands. The National Police Academy that had been overrun by gangs today is training police officers. The port that had challenges, many of the roads, I see a very positive trajectory. And this is the report I got from the Kenyan commanders on the ground and also from the Haitian police. The challenge they have, however, is logistics, more resources, and more personnel.
Well, Kenya give it to them.
And what I made, immediately I made the decision that Kenya is going to have another 600 security officers sent to Haiti to add on to the 400 that are already there, 300 next month and 300 in November. And I am going to mobilize the rest of the global community to make sure that by January we have 2,500 police officers so that we can execute the mandate that was given to us by the UN resolution setting up the MSS in Haiti. I am confident today more than ever that the job in Haiti is doable, and the people of Haiti are great people.
Mm. Mr. President, there are suggestions that perhaps the UN should get involved. It should be a UN-led effort. Where does Kenya stand on that?
Whichever way we go, so long as we deploy the requisite personnel on the ground, mobilize resources necessary, the logistics that are needed for us to do the job in Haiti, whatever name we call it, whatever color we give it, my position is that we must focus on making sure that within a year we should be able to turn tables on the gangs and the lawlessness in Haiti and give the people of Haiti a chance, like all of humanity, to drive their own progress.
Mr. President, before you go, what is your plan for the youth of Kenya in terms of listening to them instead of coming up with specific plans to meet their calls and demand? And how do you react when they said, Mr. President must go, he has not kept his promises, and he has to go?
Kenya is a robustly democratic country. I mean, because we are a democracy, I see people even in New York here demonstrating and making all manner of statements, and that is the beauty, that is the diversity of democracy. I have a very clear, elaborate plan on job creation, our housing plan, our digital footprint plan, our plan on export of labor. We just signed today here in New York a bilateral labor agreement with Austria, where Kenyan young people, the best resource we have, will find jobs in Austria. I came last week from the other week from Germany, doing the same thing, creating opportunities for the young people of Kenya to work in Kenya and to work abroad. This is my plan. It is elaborate. It is understood. And I am rolling out, and I'm very confident. For your information, before even I left Nairobi, I launched ClimateWorks, that is going to hire another 200,000 young people across Kenya on climate action and making sure that we deal with the environmental issues and climate change that is threatening humanity.
That was Kenya's President William Ruto speaking with my colleague Peter Cloti this week in New York. You'll be able to find more of Peter's conversations with leaders from African nations at the UN this week on voaafrica.com, on our Facebook page and our Instagram pages, and tune in into our weekend radio news show, Nightline Africa, on Saturday and Sunday to hear more. President Joe Biden is making his long-awaited trip to Africa next month, visiting Angola after he attends meetings in Germany. Biden promised during a summit of African leaders in Washington in 2022 that he will visit Africa the following year. First Lady Jill Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris traveled to Africa in 2023, but not Biden himself. Ebenezer Abodare is a senior fellow for African Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and a senior fellow at New York University's Center for Global Affairs. He tells VOA's Carol Van Damme there are many reasons Biden is going to Angola. Perhaps chief among them is to woo its way from China, its away from China and Russia.
President Lourenco was the last African president that President Biden hosted. I think it was November last year in the Oval Office. But I think there are much more important reasons why it's got to be Angola. The United States is doing one thing with respect to Angola. It's not only trying to gain an ally. Is trying to woo an ally away from China and Russia. That's very significant. And then, most important, there are also economic and strategic reasons. Angola has proved increasingly influential in Southern Africa, especially in having an equilibrium between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. At the same time, it's crucial in terms of its location on the Atlantic coast and is central to American project, this old infrastructure around the Lobito coast, a Lobito corridor that is going to connect Angola, Zambia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So there are so many reasons, and some of them I've just outlined.
Tell me more about why the Biden administration thinks Angola is going to be a good partner to try to fight the Islamic insurgency and the other violence that's going on in the DRC.
I think Angola has the location. One, China is trying to have a base in that same part of Africa. And if the United States can beat China to it, I think it will be a coup, you know, pardon the pun, you know, on the part of the United States. And then the other thing is, for symbolic reasons, it's got to be Angola, right? So the United States appears to have lost some ground with South Africa. South Africa appears to have gone almost fully with Russia. And then to have a country that is just two countries away that is equally important, but is also strategically located. But in addition, to also be able to go away thinking we were able to take this country away from the claws of China and Russia, I think it becomes extremely important for the United States, you know, to lay claim to Angola in this manner.
Is Angola also a strategic partner possibly for the Biden administration in trying to influence what's been going on lately in the Sahel with all these military coups and military leaders now taking over, forcing aside the democratically elected governments there?
So the direct answer is no. It's in a different region. The Sahel is further away. But here is where I think Angola comes in, which is that the United States realizes that in order to reclaim some of the ground that it's lost to China and Russia, it's got to change its strategy. So if you go to the Sahel, and I'm glad you mentioned the Sahel, it's been evicted from Niger, it's been evicted from Burkina Faso, it's been asked to leave these countries. In the Sahel specifically, the United States is looking for new friends. So Benin Republic, which is next to Nigeria, in Cote d'Ivoire, Mauritania, going after Angola falls within that larger rubric of looking for new allies.
And that was Nigerian Ebenezer Obadere, Senior Fellow for African Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Damme. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump has been the target of two assassination attempts during this campaign. VOA spoke with some gun owners who say the shootings have not changed their views on American gun laws. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
Keep walking!
Law enforcement prevent an assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump, detaining a suspect with a rifle at a Florida golf course earlier this month. That follows a separate shooter wounding Trump at a Pennsylvania campaign rally in July. VOA asked gun owners how the attempted assassinations affect their views on gun control in this election. Matthew Gonzalez says he was shocked by Trump's shooting, but that all Americans have the right to protect themselves.
Any bad person can get a hand on a gun. It's very, very accessible. You just got to know a couple of people, and it's not hard. It's that people make it out to be. And it's always going to happen. That's why you have to just watch out for yourself.
Gun rights advocate Nick Clark told VOA the assassination attempts reaffirm how firearms protect regular citizens as well as the president.
The Secret Service is armed, and the Secret Service, who protects the president, saw the person or saw the gun pointed through a line of shrubs. You don't have to have every single person carrying a gun, but if you had more people carrying a gun for self-defense, these criminals would think twice.
But most Americans say it's too easy to get a gun in this country and favor stricter gun laws, according to the Pew Research Center. Every 11 minutes, somebody dies from gun violence in the United States, notes Milwaukee-based gun violence prevention researcher Mallory O'Brien.
Young people, 1 to 17, leading cause of death for them is firearms. We right now have the highest level of gun suicides that we've ever had in our country.
She says more thorough background checks and other measures could help. But Wisconsin indoor shooting range co-owner Cheryl Repholz favors enforcing existing gun laws instead of imposing new ones.
You can see the display of firearms behind me, and they're inanimate objects. They're just sitting there resting. Gun owners, we don't use them for felonies. We are responsible gun owners.
Authorities say the weapon used in Trump's first assassination attempt appears to have been purchased legally. The second suspect appeared in court this week, charged with possession of a firearm as a convicted felon and possession of a firearm with an obliterated serial number. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Mequon, Wisconsin.
A regional court in East Africa is hearing a case filed by the Democratic Republic of Congo against neighboring Rwanda. The Associated Press reports that Kinshasa is accusing Kigali of violating the DRC's sovereignty and territorial integrity by sending troops to help rebels in the DRC's east. In July, UN experts estimated 3,000 to 4,000 Rwandan government forces are deployed in eastern DRC alongside the M23 rebel group, which has been making major advances. Rwanda's lawyer has urged that the case be dismissed, saying the regional court does not handle criminal matters. Rwanda's government also has repeatedly denied allegations it backs the M23 rebels. Thursday's proceedings came a day after DRC President Felix Tshisekedi called for sanctions against Rwanda at the UN General Assembly, alleging its support for the M23 rebels. And officials say new fighting has hit Sudan's capital as the death toll jumps up from a cholera outbreak. The Sudanese media reports that military launched an operation early Thursday to take control of areas of Khartoum that has been in the hands of its enemy, the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. The Associated Press reports that a military spokesman confirmed the operation was underway but declined to comment further. Jeremy Lawrence, a spokesman for the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva, told the Associated Press that at least 78 civilians were killed by the fighting since fighting began in September in the Khartoum area. We have now in studio our VOA sports analyst, Omo Lemokale, and he's here to fill us on the inaugural Women by Only Athletes New York track meet, and which events to look forward to watching next week. Welcome to African News Tonight, Omo Lemo.
Thank you so much for having me, Yahis.
So let's start with some women's basketball. What's the WNBA postseason looking like so far?
Well, we have actually an exciting season, postseason specifically. We are in the playoffs. Right now, the Connecticut Suns beat the Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever in a two-game series, advancing them to the semifinals. Well, they'll be facing the Minnesota Lynx this weekend. And Caitlin Clark's rookie season tallied up with over 700 points, 227 assists, 337 rebounds, and 122 three-point shots. She became the first WNBA rookie to record a triple-double and set the rookie season scoring record while getting the overall season assist record.
And Omo Lemo, tell us about the big recent track event that concluded yesterday. Give us some of the winners.
Absolutely. So in this inaugural women's only Athlos New York City track meet, we had a bunch of winners that had a bunch of also big prizes as well. So for the 100-meter dash, we had Maria Jose Talu-Smith that won first place in the 100-meter dash with the sub-11 seconds. We also had another exciting race in the 800-meter race with Ethiopia's Tige Duguma winning with a time of 1 minute and 57 seconds. And finally, the grand one-mile run was won by Kenya's Olympic champion Faith Kipyegon, winning her the grand prize of $60,000.
Wow. And how about next week? Any events you think we should look out for?
Yeah, so for the Champions League next week, on October 1st, we have Barcelona playing the Young Boys. We also have Arsenal playing against PSG. That looks like a pretty exciting game. And we also have the Slovan Bratislava playing Manchester City. As well as October 1st, we have October 2nd as well. Real Madrid is going to be playing LOSC, the Lille Olympique Sporting Club. Aston Villa is going to be playing against Bayern Munich. And another exciting game, we have Benfica playing against Athletic Madrid.
VOA sports analyst, intern Omo Lemo Kale, thank you for your input.
Thank you so much, Yahis.
Coming up on Africa 54 TV show is Esther Getu Ewer. We have an interview with Kenya's President William Ruto on his visit to Haiti, the Caribbean nation. He also commented on the proposal to have two permanent positions for Africa at the United Nations Security Council. For this and more, tune in on your local TV station at 1630 UTC.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Douglas Impuga, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.